Yeah. Genesis chapter 11. We really are at verse 10, but let me back up, because I think there's a little bit of leftover about the Tower of Babel, and I want to trace that. So let's just pick up at verse 1. Genesis 11, 1. Now the whole earth was had one language and one speech. It came to pass as they journeyed from the east that they found a plain in the land of Shinar, and they dwelt there. Then they said to one another, "Come, let us make bricks and bake them thoroughly." They had bricks for stone, and they had asphalt for mortar. And they said, "Come, let us build ourselves a city and a tower whose top is in the heavens. Let us make a name for ourselves, lest we be scattered abroad over the face of the whole earth." But the Lord came down to see the city and the tower which the sons of men had built. And the Lord said, "Indeed, the people are one, and they all have one language. And this is what they begin to do. Now nothing that they propose to do will be withheld from them. Come, let us go down and there confuse their language, that they may not understand one another's speech." So the Lord scattered them abroad from there over the face of all the earth, and they ceased building the city. Therefore its name is called Babel, because there the Lord confused the language of all the earth, and from there the Lord scattered them abroad over the face of all the earth. Let's pray. Lord, as much about human nature we see when we look at your word, things we know really, but often are slow to admit. For even today, there's a great feeling of confidence that men can fix all the problems of the world. You know, there's optimism about human achievement, the belief that our fate, as they call it, rests in our own hands. We can identify and then overcome. And so we see today the sad state of that philosophy, where to fix thoughts of hatred and not including people, there have become an acceptance of all kinds of practices that your word declares immoral. And we're not surprised, because, Lord, we can look into your word and see exactly how we're going to do and how we have done. So we thank you for that and pray, Lord, that the light of the gospel, the light of your people as salt and light in this world, would have an effect, and you'd have mercy upon us. In Jesus' name, amen. Suppose you have a car. Your car has been working, and then all of a sudden you start hearing a banging in the engine. Maybe this has happened to you. And it knocks and knocks and knocks and knocks, and you don't know what it is, and finally it gets to be too much, and you take it to the mechanic and you say, "It's got to knock it in the engine." And the mechanic takes it and he says, "He can't find it." And another mechanic, "No, can't. I don't know what's causing it." And they suggest the only possibility would just be to replace the engine. So that's what you decide to do. So you replace the engine and get it back. You're glad to have it back. You get it and you drive it about a mile or two, and it starts knocking again. New engine and everything. Now at this point, you're frustrated. What could you have done? I mean, what is it about this car you're thinking? What is this? It's possessed now. Maybe the engine before, but it must have a demon in it. Well, consider this. The world was created by the Lord. The Bible tells us, in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth and created man, commanded man that what God wanted on his earth was holiness, obedience, follow the Lord, and Adam and Eve did not do that. They rebelled against the Lord's commandment. Don't eat the fruit. They ate the fruit, and they died. They were separated from God. They ran from God, and their children of all generations after, they being our head, the fountain of all human existence, all are sinners as a result of that. We sin in Adam as our federal head, the theologians would tell us. So every person born is not going to be pure, they're not going to be innocent, they're going to be sinful. And we find that to be the case. So Adam and Eve sinned. Cain and Abel are born, and you got two sons there, and Cain kills Abel and is cursed. Beyond that, we saw all the way up to just before the flood, the sons of God finally mingled with the daughters of men. There was no protection of any kind of sacred behavior. They just finally mingled all together. It was easier just to throw all the whole mess into a pile. And by the time we come to the sixth chapter of Genesis, the thoughts of men are only evil continually, and it grieves God that he made man. So God decides to destroy man from the face of the earth, saves Noah and his wife and his three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth, and their wives. So there are eight people on the ark, all the animals, and they spend a little bit over a year on the ark with the flood. Then after the flood, the water dries, and then they come down from Mount Ararat, and God makes a covenant with them. And the covenant basically was, I'm not going to do this anymore. I'm not going to destroy the world by a flood anymore. And that's important because that would be, you know, to the settling of the people on the earth. That God gives them assurance that he's not against them. He wants to build up the world again. And that they should, follow the Lord and do their part, which is to be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth. So that was their command, and off they go to do that. We think at least 100 years later, some say as many as 350 years after the flood, they are approaching the land of Shinar, a plain there, and that is when the Tower of Babel is begun. Now, 100 years at minimum, Noah would still be alive, and they decide that they're not going to replenish the earth, they're not going to spread out, they're not going to do the will of God, they're going to become an entity in themselves. You see how it's worded in Genesis, let's make a name for ourselves. Lest we be scattered. That's another way of saying lest we follow God's command and replenish the earth. We don't want to do that. So they built a tower. And they are at this time very self-willed. Nimrod is mentioned as probably he was a mighty warrior. We're told a mighty hunter. He was of the sons of Cush, and he seemingly is the one who began this excursion that he is identified with Babel in the lists. So Nimrod, strong probably both in body and in will against God, ends up being probably the start of this. So Babel rises, and God looks at it, just like it happened before the flood. God saw from heaven, and of course this is language for us to equate it to human looking and discovery. God saw from heaven at how men were doing, what they were doing. It was all only evil, so he intervened with a flood. Promising never to do that again, he comes down again here in the Tower of Babel and intervenes again. This time by confounding the languages. So that the languages of the people in the city are unintelligible between them. They don't all speak the same language anymore. They're not of one speech, not of one language. So as a natural calamity of that, they move on to other places. So God forces upon them what they would not do. If you think about it, God could have just got them out of the ark and confound their languages right away, knowing they weren't going to do what they were supposed to do. But that's not the way God works. He lays responsibility upon man. When men rebel, men are showing that they're worthy of judgment. They're choosing their own way as far as men are concerned, and they do evil, so they reap the punishment of it. Babel, then, was the city was abandoned, the tower at least. But there's a thread, then, in the Bible from Babel to Babylon. And Babylon becomes a city, again, in the same region. Probably was, although not all the people were carrying out the original plan to build the Tower of Babel, and they scattered, this city, the city of Babylon, once again became a city in time. And we know Babylon was a mighty city. It was believed to be probably at its zenith, was the first city in the world that might have had over 200,000 people post-flood. And it, you had the hanging of the gardens of Babylon, which some have said is one of the seven wonders of the world. So Babylon rose. Then from that, the Babylonian Empire. Now Babylon's a city. But the Babylonian Empire was that empire that rose in the time of Jerusalem's fall, Nebuchadnezzar, and destroyed Jerusalem. Assyria destroyed the northern tribe of Israel, the 10 tribes. So Babylon is then a world empire for a time. And that ended in Daniel. If you remember Daniel, during the book of Daniel, the Medes and the Persians destroyed the strength of Babylon. And Babylon was a tool by God to use against a rebellious nation of Israel. But the Lord prophesied judgment against Babylon. Look at Isaiah chapter 13. This would have been written some like 150 years before the destruction of Babylon, at least. Maybe even longer than that. But verse 1, Isaiah 13, this whole chapter now, notice it says in verse 1, the burden against Babylon, which Isaiah the son of Amoz saw. Lift up a banner on that high mountain. On the high mountain, raise your voice to them. Wave your hand that they may enter the gates of the nobles. I have commanded my sanctified ones. I have also called my mighty ones for my anger, those who rejoice in my exaltation. The noise of a multitude in the mountains, like that of many people, a tumultuous noise of the kingdoms of nations gathered together. The Lord of hosts musters the army for battle. They come from a far country, from the end of heaven, even the Lord and his weapons of indignation to destroy the whole land. Well, for the day of the Lord is at hand. It will come as destruction from the Almighty. Therefore, all hands will be limp. Every man's heart will melt, and they will be afraid. Pangs and sorrows will take hold of them. They will be in pain as a woman in childbirth. They will be amazed at one another. Their faces will be like flames. Behold, the day of the Lord comes, cruel, with both wrath and fierce anger, to lay the land desolate, and he will destroy its sinners from it. For the stars of heaven and their constellations will not give their light. The sun will be darkened in its going forth, and the moon will not cause its light to shine. I will punish the world for its evil, and the wicked for their iniquity. I will halt the arrogance of the proud, and will lay low the haughtiness of the terrible. I will make a mortal more rare than fine gold, a man more than one golden wedge of Ophir. Therefore, I will shake the heavens, and the earth will move out of her place. in the wrath of the Lord of hosts and in the day of his fierce anger. It shall be as the hunted gazelle and as a sheep that no man takes up. Every man will turn to his own people, and everyone will flee to his own land. Everyone who is found will be thrust through, and everyone who is captured will fall by the sword. Their children also will be dashed to pieces before their eyes. Their houses will be plundered and their wives ravished. Behold, I will stir up the Medes against them, who will not regard silver, and as for gold, they will not delight in it. Also their bows will dash the young men to pieces, and they will have no pity on the fruit of the womb. Their eye will not spare children. And Babylon, the glory of kingdoms, the beauty of the Chaldeans' pride, will be as when God overthrew Sodom and Gomorrah. It will never be inhabited, nor will it be settled from generation to generation, nor will the Arabian pitch tents there, nor will the shepherds make their sheepfolds there. But wild beasts of the desert will lie there, and their houses will be full of owls. Ostriches will dwell there, and wild goats will caper there. The hyenas will howl in their citadels, and jackals in their pleasant places, or palaces. Her time is near to come, and her days will not be prolonged. Now he goes on some more in the next chapter, but that's sufficient to see that God plans the destruction of Babylon. This great kingdom from the Medes. And we see in Daniel is exactly how it happened, and Daniel begins, it's Babylon. As it proceeds, we come to, in chapter 6, I believe, the Medes and the Persians. Belshazzar finally being the last of the Babylonians, and then the Medes and Persians come in. So this all occurred in history. It was predicted here by Isaiah and others. Look at Jeremiah 51, for example. Another prophet, same speaking in the same way, Jeremiah 51, verse 11. Jeremiah says here, from the Lord, make the arrows bright, gather the shields. The Lord has raised up the spear of the kings of the Medes, for his plan is against Babylon to destroy it, because it is the vengeance of the Lord, the vengeance for his temple. Set up the standard in the walls, on the walls of Babylon, make the guards strong, set up the watchmen, prepare the ambushes, for the Lord has both devised and done what he spoke against the inhabitants of Babylon. So Babylon was to be destroyed by the Persians. And this happened later on after the prophecy. Jeremiah would have prophesied a little bit later probably than Isaiah of the same thing. So Babylon would be destroyed. And the Medes and the Persians did so. Isaiah says it would be a place that's uninhabitable. Nothing's there. Barnyard animals, basically. And it's not going to be rebuilt or lived in. Now, I was curious about that. Because a great city like Babylon, where they were in the capital of the empire at one time, where one of the seven wonders of the world was said to exist, and Nebuchadnezzar, the great king, resided, how could it just completely vanish? It is possible to go to Babylon today. It's in Iraq. I'm not sure, I guess it's still there, one of Saddam Hussein's palaces was just next to it, his summer palace. In the about 50 some miles from Baghdad to the south. Now you can go there today. There's actually people there trying to work in the area. It's a historical, archaeological treasure there. Let me describe what I saw of it. It would be kind of like if kids made little sandcastles And then the ocean came in and washed it. That's the way it looked. It looked like it had just been worn completely down. There were no buildings there. There were little brick, clay brick places, little places over here and there. There were some buildings around. There's some restoration going on. The archaeologists were mad at the United States for not taking better care of it when we were over there. They said we built an airstrip there or a helicopter pad there. But a lot of things have happened over the years in Babylon. All the bricks, all the parts of the city, people just nearby, they would just take it and build little things with it. So the river also, Euphrates, I believe, used to run through the city and divide the city, you know, left and right, and it changed its course. And they say now most of the western part of Babylon is underwater. I looked at a video and a man was talking about where the tower was. He said there's a base down there under the water with bricks and things that form a square. And there was probably a ziggurat, I believe it's called, on it at some point, but it was underwater now. It looked like a complete devastation. Nobody lives there, and this was recent. There's nothing there. It really has occurred. This great city has fallen because of the judgment of God, and it has not been inhabited. It is in the desert in a clump of clay. If you want to look it up, go for it. There are little places here and there. There are little buildings here and there probably. Some have maybe been restored, but it's devastation. If you went there, you wouldn't mind staying in Saddam's palace, but you wouldn't want to stay there at the ruins of Babylon. The city, they believe, was about a mile north to south, about a half a mile east to west. And it's gone. Underwater, in a great portion, ruined, judged. And Jeremiah says in verse 11, that God had a particular anger toward Babylon. His plan is against Babylon to destroy it. Why? Because it is the vengeance of the Lord, the vengeance for his temple. The Lord destroyed Israel, the northern 10 tribes, by the hand of Assyria. But Jeroboam had set up other places to worship for Israel, and they were misled into worshiping at Dan and Bethel, I believe, two different places where they would worship basically in front of a golden idol. And none of the kings of Israel were any good. None of them were morally good people. All were said to be evil before the Lord. And when the Lord destroyed Israel, some 150 years before Jerusalem, that was certainly a great judgment. But when it comes to Babylon destroying Jerusalem, they went and they destroyed the temple. Not that the temple as a building is anything. And Ezekiel, at the beginning of Ezekiel, you'll find the glory of the Lord slowly, gradually leaving the temple and running off and to the distant away from the temple. God's glory departed from it, and the Babylonians came in, and it was God using the Babylonians, but the Babylonians weren't trying to do the work of God. They were trying to do the work of man. And the result was destruction. And there's nobody living in Babylon. Now, as I say, Iraq is there. Babylon was right smack dab, looked like to me on the map, right smack dab in the middle of Iraq. And it is a plain. I could see if you were people traveling and you got to a place and you saw nothing but nothing all through, you'd say, let's just stop here and do something because I don't see anywhere we're going even. So they build a city there. And the plan was to unite there until they were thrown into confusion. But at the end of the Bible, in Revelation, if you look at Revelation chapter 14, there's mention of Babylon. Now, Peter mentions Babylon in 1 Peter 5:13 when he says those who are in Babylon, she who is in Babylon, elect together with you, greet you, and so does Mark, my son. Mark being Mark, you know. But there's some disagreement as to whether that was an actual place or whether it was spiritual Babylon. Some say, MacArthur says it was an allusion to Rome, which Calvin rejects. He didn't reject MacArthur because MacArthur wasn't born, but Calvin said that was also in his day an opinion. But that the Roman Catholics were using it to justify their belief that Peter was the first bishop of Rome, the first pope, so he rejected it based on that. But it's either a literal place or a spiritual Babylon. But here we get to Revelation 14, verse 8. Notice what is said here. And another angel followed, saying, Babylon is fallen, that great city, because she has made all nations drink of the wine of the wrath of her fornication. Babylon? I just saw the picture of Babylon. Nothing to see. Couple of roads, a couple of dirt roads running by it, some palm trees, and a bunch of clay pits and water. But here in Revelation, Babylon is still kicking. Revelation 16, verse 17. The seventh angel poured out his bowl into the air, and a loud voice from out of the temple of heaven, from the throne, saying, it is done. And there were noises and thunderings and lightnings, and there was a great earthquake, with such a mighty and great earthquake as had not occurred since men were on the earth. Now the great day was divided into three parts, and the cities of the nations fell. And great Babylon was remembered before God, to give her the cup of the wine of the fierceness of his wrath. Then every island fled away, and the mountains were not found, and great hail from heaven fell upon men, every hailstone about the weight of a talent. And men blasphemed God because of the plague of hail, since that plague was exceedingly great. Now I believe, as probably you do as well, that Revelation is still speaking of a future time. But it's laying back into the past. And if you were sharp in Isaiah 13, you noticed probably that the same kind of language you see in Revelation was in Isaiah 13 about the manifestation of things in the heavens and such. That's the way it speaks of great judgment. So Babylon is destroyed in Revelation. Look at verse 1 of chapter 17. One of the seven angels who had the seven bowls came and talked to me, saying to me, come, I will show you the judgment of the great harlot who sits on many waters, with whom the kings of the earth committed fornication, and the inhabitants of the earth were made drunk with the wine of her fornication. So he carried me away in the spirit into the wilderness, and I saw a woman sitting on a scarlet beast, which was full of names of blasphemy, having seven heads and ten horns. The woman was arrayed in purple and scarlet, and adorned with gold and precious stones and pearls, having in her hand a golden cup full of abominations and the filthiness of her fornication. And on her forehead a name was written, Mystery, Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and of the abominations of the earth. And I saw the woman drunk with the blood of the saints and with the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. And when I saw her, I marveled with great amazement. The great harlot is called Mystery, Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and of the abominations of the earth. Verse 7, but the angel said to me, why do you marvel? I will tell you the mystery of the woman and of the beast that carries her, which has the seven heads and the ten horns. So you see, you got two entities here. The woman, Mystery Babylon, and the beast that carries her. The beast that you saw was and is not and will ascend out of the bottomless pit and go to perdition. And those who dwell on the earth will marvel, whose names are not written in the book of life from the foundation of the world, when they see the beast that was and is not and yet is. Here's the mind which has wisdom. The seven heads are seven mountains on which the woman sits. There are also seven kings. Five have fallen, one is, and the other has not yet come. And when he comes, he must continue a short time. And the beast that was and is not is himself also the eighth and is of the seven and is going to perdition. And the ten horns which you saw are ten kings who have received no kingdom as yet, but they receive authority for 1 hour as kings with the beast. They are of one mind and they will give their power and authority to the beast. These will make war with the Lamb, and the Lamb will overcome them, for he is Lord of lords and King of kings, and those who are with him are called chosen and faithful. And he said to me, the waters which you saw where the harlot sits are peoples, multitudes, nations, and tongues. And the ten horns which you saw on the beast, these will hate the harlot, make her desolate and naked, and eat her flesh, and burn her with fire, for God has put into their hearts to fulfill his purpose, to be of one mind and to give their kingdom to the beast until the words of God are fulfilled. And the woman whom you saw is that great city which reigns over the kings of the earth. Now at this point, it is increasingly clear that Babylon is used not as a particular city back in Iraq, or today in Iraq, and it was destroyed, but a spirit of the same. Chapter 18 continues in that. After these things, I saw another angel coming down from heaven, having great authority, and the earth was illuminated with his glory, and he cried mightily with a loud voice, saying, Babylon the great is fallen, has become a habitation of demons, a prison for every foul spirit, and a cage for every unclean and hated bird. For all the nations have drunk of the wine of the wrath of her fornication. The kings of the earth have committed fornication with her, and the merchants of the earth have become rich through the abundance of her luxury. This is a system of evil that is being described. All the kings of the earth have had concourse, fornication with this beast, Babylon. So Babylon becomes, if you trace it from Babel, Babel is the spirit of rebellion. Begun there in the plains of Shinar, that God intervened in, that blossomed on into that same spirit in Babylon, and the empire of Babylon that then destroyed the temple, which stirs God's vengeance against Babylon, so he wipes it out. And I, again, look at the picture. It's wiped out. But the spirit remains. And in Revelation, before the Lord returns, there is the defeating of the world system of rebellion against God. Babylon the Great is fallen, has become a dwelling place of demons, a prison for every foul spirit. You see, it's become, this is what the world does. There is concourse in the world outside of God's will, to make money, to have pleasure, to thrive in a national sense. And down in verse 21, Revelation 18, a mighty angel took up a stone like a great millstone and threw it into the sea, saying, Thus with violence the great city Babylon shall be thrown down and shall not be found anymore. The sound of harpists, musicians, flutists, trumpeters shall not be heard in you anymore. And no craftsman of any craft shall be found in you anymore. And the sound of a millstone shall not be heard in you anymore. And the light of a lamp shall not shine in you anymore. And the voice of bridegroom and bride shall not be heard in you anymore. For your merchants were the great men of the earth. For by your sorcery all the nations were deceived. And in her was found the blood of prophets and saints and of all who were slain on the earth. The first Babylon physically assaulted Jerusalem, killed the temple, but the spirit, the same Babylonian evil spirit, remains. And God destroyed the first Babylon, the city, and it remains that way. This is the spiritual Babylon. This is the world system that was portrayed by the Babylonian Empire, where it rules over all the kings of the earth. It's the same evil. They all are seeking the same evil. And Babylon is here the picture of it. Babylon's already been destroyed. But then this Babylon that will be destroyed is the system. The harlot is the false religion of it. It all is coming to an end. Look at today. Our nation and nations all through the world, they don't operate within the confines of biblical Christianity or the Bible. They're doing their own thing. That's why they set bathroom rules. That's why they set marriage rules, all against God's will. That's why people do whatever they want to do. They just do what feels right, and it's getting increasingly so. It was the way before the flood. It was the way after the flood. It was that way in the plains of Shinar. It's that way today. That same spirit, that Babylonian rebellion against God, will do our own thing until God brings it to an end. He brought it to an end at Babylon, or at the Tower of Babel. He brought it to an end in the flood before that. He brought Babylon to an end in the city and the empire later through the Medes and the Persians. And then in the end, he brings it all to an end and all the kinfolk to it. Babylon the Great is fallen. Just as it became a place for wild animals to dwell physically, it's pictured here at the end as becoming a nothing. No more place in all the earth. And I think it's traced from the Tower of Babel, all through the scriptures, so that Babylon becomes, from the Tower of Babel, the first clear, organized rebellion against God after the flood, until the end, where the rebellion is ended by the coming of Christ and the judgment at the end. That is the trace, I think, on Babylon. Not Babylon, the city in Iraq. It's just not there. It's a spiritual Babylon now that some cities will be capital of. And maybe Rome was intended here. But that system is being ended. Any questions or thoughts?